that then we allow people to get into risk they shouldn't be getting into. The purpose of today's is to receive a briefing on the cross-boundary municipalities laws, appeal and related matters. And of course, we also requested that from the state law advisors, we also receive a briefing on the constitutional amendments, the 13th, I guess it would be, 13th Amendment Act, so that we have a sense of what the what is before us. Ordinarily, we would have preferred to have had these briefings together with Justice and with the select committee so that we work together around these things. And part of the reason being that in any case, the briefings that we receive will be more or less the same, and our considerations should then facilitate a speedier management of the process. That would be the reason for doing it together. But unfortunately, we have timelines to meet. And the NCOP, unfortunately, this week is out on provincial oversight visit, and so we are not able to be with them in this briefing. But we will find a way in which we will interact with a select committee around these issues for further consideration. The purpose of today is to receive a briefing and clarification of issues that are in the legislation, and then we would then take it forward later in the processes that we will talk about. So, by discussion with the department, I am told that it will be the briefing on the constitutional amendment first, because that is what comes first, and then we will follow with the briefing on the legislation that flows from that constitutional amendment. And who will do that?
Mr. Lovascogni from the Court of Justice will brief us.
Okay, Mr. Lovascogni, please go ahead.
Thank you, Chairperson. I believe a copy of the bill has been distributed amongst the members. You will note from the general on the object of the bill as contained at the back of the bill. It's quite comprehensive, and I do not have much to add. I will, however, for convenience of the members, take them briefly through that object memo so that they can have a better understanding of what the bill seeks to do. Chairperson, firstly, as some background information, you and other members of this. Background information, you and other members will recall that during 2005, this committee, together with the Justice Committee and the corresponding select committees, considered the Constitution 12th Amendment Bill and the Cross-Boundary Municipalities Law of Appeal and Related Matters Bill. Those two bills were passed by Parliament during December 2005. And the President by proclamation determined 1 March 2006 as the date on which those two acts will come into operation. The Constitution 12th Amendment Act amended the Constitution to redetermine the geographical areas of the 9 provinces and to do away with cross-boundary municipalities. The Repeal Act gave effect to consequential matters emanating from the 12th Amendment. However, before those two acts were put into operation or commenced on the 1st of March, the constitutional validity of the 12th Amendment and the Repeal Act were challenged in the Constitutional Court in the case of Matadil Municipality and others versus the President of the Republic of South Africa. In terms of the 12th Amendment and the Repeal Act, the provincial boundary between the province of Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal was altered so that the area that was previously called the local municipality of Mthathiel was transferred from KZN of KwaZulu-Natal to the Eastern Cape. And new municipalities were also created as a consequence. The applicant in the Mutatio case argued that those two acts that changed the boundary and moved Mutatio from KZN to the Eastern Cape was not promoted or passed by Parliament in accordance with the procedures set out in the Constitution, firstly. And secondly, they also indicated that Parliament, by passing those two acts, took over the functions of the Municipal Demarcation Board as required or as that was reserved in the Constitution for that board specifically. On 27 February 2006, the Constitutional Court rejected the applicant's main argument, namely that Parliament took over the functions of the Demarcation Board. The Court further decided that the elections scheduled for 1 March 2006 should go ahead. The Court, however, did not decide the question whether the 12th Amendment and the Repeal Act was constitutional or not. The Court further requested arguments from the respondent government on the question whether that part of the 12th Amendment that transferred or that changed the boundary between the Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal was passed in accordance with the procedural provisions of the Constitution. That hearing, of course, was then to take place after the local government elections that were held on the 1st of March. Then on 18th of August 2006, the Constitutional Court, again in the Mutatio case, after it heard the further argument that it requested, declared that part of the 12th Amendment, which transferred Mutatio municipality from KwaZulu-Natal to the province of Eastern Cape, to be inconsistent with the Constitution and invalid. The Court's order of invalidity was based on a procedural defect, namely the failure of the KwaZulu-Natal provincial legislature to facilitate public involvement as required by Section 181A of the Constitution. Now, Section 181A of the Constitution provides that a provincial, and I quote, a provincial legislature must facilitate public involvement in the legislative and other processes of the legislature and its committees. It could be pointed out that the provincial legislature of KwaZulu-Natal did not hold any public hearings on the 12th Amendment. It did not invite any comments. So, and that's why the court then found that it failed to comply with its constitutional obligation to facilitate public involvement. Then, as a result of the interrelationship between the 12th Amendment and the Repeal Act, the court also declared those parts of the Repeal Act that relates to Mutatio as inconsistent with the Constitution and therefore invalid. Thus, the two orders of invalidity were suspended for a period of 18 months, during which Parliament had the opportunity to correct the constitutional defect that gave rise to that order of orders of invalidity. Now, according to our calculations, the period of suspension of 18 months will expire on the 18th of February next year. Chairman, that is as far as the judgments are concerned. I'm not going to go into too much detail as far as the judgments are concerned. We can make copies available if any of the members are interested to read the judgment and to get more detail. Chairperson, then the Constitutional Court's order of invalidity was formulated with reference to the Mutatio municipality only, because the whole case was about Mutatio municipality. It could, however, be argued that the failure by the KwaZulu-Natal provincial legislature to consult on the proposed changes to its provincial boundary could also affect other changes to its boundary. It could therefore further be argued that because the order of invalidity was based on a procedural defect only, the other provisions in the 12th Amendment that affect the boundary changes to the KwaZulu-Natal provincial boundary could, if they were challenged in the Constitutional Court, also be found unconstitutional. Because then it was not only one area of KwaZulu-Natal that was affected, but there were more than one. So if it caused the province fail to consult in respect of one area, fail to consult in respect of all the areas, and only one area took it to court and succeeded, if any of the other areas decided also to go to court, they would also have succeeded. That's the point that we want to make here. The further view has been expressed that although the constitutional defect that gave rise to the order of invalidity only relates to the failure of KwaZulu-Natal provincial legislature to facilitate the public involvement, it appears not possible to attend to that defect in isolation. As a result of the knock-on effect on municipalities now situated in the Eastern Cape province after the commencement of the 12th Amendment, the view has been expressed that any legislative amendment that seeks to address that defect must also contain references to the Eastern Cape province and not only to the KwaZulu-Natal province. Then, if we now get to the object of the bill, Chairperson, the Constitutional Court, after declaring the provisions relating to KwaZulu-Natal invalid, it had to decide on an appropriate remedy. In that regard, the court remarked as follows, and I quote, "Suspending the order of invalidity will allow Parliament to remedy the constitutional defect and adopt a new constitutional amendment after complying with the provisions of the Constitution. This would allow the elections held on 1 March 2006 to stand pending a new constitutional amendment." Then further on, court remarked again as follows, "These legislative bodies, referring to Parliament and provincial legislatures, must be given the opportunity to correct the constitutional defect and in a manner that is consistent with the Constitution adopt a fresh amendment." Now, Chairperson, from these two quotes, it's clear that new legislation, namely the Constitutional Amendment Bill, Constitution 30th Amendment Bill, must be processed afresh in a manner that complies with the procedural requirements of the Constitution. That was clearly stated by the court. Now, the Constitution 30th Amendment Bill is premised on the principle that only those provisions in the Constitution that are affected by the failure of KwaZulu-Natal to consult or to facilitate public involvement, in other words, the provisions that refer directly to Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal, are to be substituted and re-enacted. The bill therefore seeks to re-enact and substitute all those provisions in the Constitution 12th Amendment Act, the act that was declared unconstitutional, to substitute them in exactly the same manner. So there's no change as far as the provisions are concerned. So the areas, as it was determined by the Constitution 12th Amendment, is basically reaffirmed by the Constitution 13th Amendment 4. Although the Eastern Cape, when it considered whether or not to approve the Constitution 12th Amendment bill at that point in time, because it had to approve it in view of the Constitution Section 47(3)(b) or 47(74)(8) specifically provides that any constitutional amendment that affects a province must be approved by that province before the NCOP can approve it. And because the Constitution 12th Amendment affected provincial boundaries, it affected provinces, and therefore the provinces had to approve it. Now, Eastern Cape did facilitate the necessary public involvement. It did approve the Constitution 12th Amendment at that point in time, but because the Constitution 13th Amendment is a whole new bill, Eastern Cape Province will have to go through that whole same process again. They will have to hold public hearings. They will have to approve the bill before the NCOP can pass the bill. So, despite the fact that they've done it previously, they, or that province has to do it again in respect of the 13th Amendment Bill. The chairperson, that is basically the purpose then of the Constitutional 13th Amendment, summarized, is to substitute and reenact the provisions in the Constitution that was declared unconstitutional, the provisions that relate to, or that relate to Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal, in order to give effect to the judgment of the Constitutional Court. Chairperson, lastly, as I've mentioned, the period of suspension expire on the 18th of February 2008, which means that this Constitution 30th Amendment Bill, as well as the cross-boundary municipalities law appeal and related matters Amendment Bill, must be passed by Parliament before it adjourns at the end of this year. That is, I'm mentioning this to indicate the urgency of these two bills. And if the bills are not passed and not enacted before the 18th of February 2006, the areas of in KwaZulu-Natal and Eastern Cape will be reversed back.
Yeah. A couple of bits. I think first, I'm certainly the other members appeal the same, but I'd like a copy of that legal opinion that was offered to us. I'd like to read it. The legal opinion, you said. The judgment. Sorry, judgment. Because you make that available to us. And then a couple of questions. In respect of consultation, has the department given any thought to giving guidance to the provinces concerned as to how they should consult this time? He's not repeating the same disaster as last time. And specifically, is there any thought being given by government to some form of local referendum to determine the outcome of the support one way or the other? And then secondly, which I suppose in a sense is a opposite side of the same coin question, why has government taken the view that the same provision should be reenacted now? Have you in fact engaged in sufficient consultation yourself to believe that this is the right way to go? And are you not persuaded by any arguments to the contrary that there may be merit in reconsidering the basis of the original proposal, especially given the fact that the demarcation board held the contrary view to the government?
Thank you very much. let me also welcome the presentation and that propose one or two questions for clarity. One is around the demarcation board. I can understand all the other things, that is, both provinces must have public hearings and approve the amendment in their legislature. Does the demarcation board have a role once more to play on this matter? And I would also agree with Peter to what assistance is going to be provided to the provinces to ensure that they hold proper facilitate proper public hearings and ensure that people participate. how we're going to manage this process, because, you know, motions are very high there, and we must ensure that there will be no stick fighting, you see, in those areas because others don't agree. We must ensure that this process will be properly managed and it's going to be inclusive rather than exclusive, because I know the area is very big. We shouldn't go to one corner and they said, and then we say to ourselves we are satisfied by what we get. It's not that people are opposed to be put in one province or another, but as Peter has said, they want to know exactly what are the real reasons. I don't know, Chair, you spoke of Fortier. Is Fortier also part of this thing?
English language, very problematic. Forget about that word. All I meant is that it is the business of the Portfolio Committee of Justice to handle.
Okay,
all I meant, so forget
thanks,
about that word.
Thanks very much.
Thank
was,
you, sir. Yes.
I was worried that Fortier.
I think we should just share because we've been together in this process. If you, Chairperson, first of all, I think just to start off with the consultation issue, we did visit the two provinces involved to reaffirm the requirements for consultation. You're quite correct that the finding of the court was based on the fact that KwaZulu-Natal does not consult at all, does not involve public at all. However, having said that, the court did give an indication that the nature or the extent of consultation will depend on the circumstances. And even in the court case itself, they referred to some possibilities that might be applicable depending on the circumstances. Because you must also remember that this particular judgment was given very closely to another judgment in the Constitutional Court related to health law. So where consultation was also at issue. So they've indicated that you should consider the extent of your consultation depending on the circumstances. In engaging with the two provincial legislatures, I think the one aspect that one should bear in mind is that the rules of the legislatures themselves determine how consultation and engagement must take place. In KwaZulu-Natal, we were requested to brief the whole portfolio committee of the legislature, because their rules requires of the committee as a collective to do the public engagement. We did propose that the two legislatures have joint consultations, joint public exposure, and then take the different resolutions separately within their own legislative rules and principles. Also, I think that was a matter that was highlighted by both the speakers of the two legislatures was that there is a suggestion, not that upfront in the judgment, that consultation where you're dealing with boundary realignment should not only entail that what you're going to release, but also what you might receive, the area. Now, the relevance of that is particularly pertinent to this instance. And that is one of the challenges that the two legislatures are actually discussing and see how they should manage it. The fact of the matter is that as a result of the suspension order of the Constitutional Court, Umzimkulu is presently not part of the Eastern Cape. So then start begging the question, can the Eastern Cape legislature move into an area in KZN to go and consult there? It's crudely put, the challenge that we now experience, that as a result of the suspension, it's no longer you going to consult in your own area regarding a possible boundary change. So for that reason also, the suggestion was strongly made that they should have joint consultations and assist each other in facilitating those engagements. But ultimately, then the decisions and the resolutions will be adopted separately. So it's just to facilitate that process, minimize costs, and have proper engagement in that regard. Chairperson, then regarding the question of why we're reenacting the provision and is the demarcation board again involved, I think to some extent one should move from the premise that in view of the decision of the Constitutional Court to say, go and rectify the defect. To some extent we, or government as a whole, will have to look at what is presently there. As a result of the suspension order, effect was given to the proposals that were contained in the Constitution 12 Amendment. And based on that premise, currently the approach is to reenact and maintain the position or status quo that came into existence on 1 March 2007. So for that reason, the Demarcation Board would not again be involved because we're just reenacting the provisions that are currently contained, but albeit found invalid, in the Constitution 12 Amendment and in the Cross-Boundary Repeal and Related Matters Act. So we're reenacting that. That is the current proposal in the two bills.
Yeah, but Petra, whilst you are there, shouldn't you also comment on whether the Demarcation Board has a mandate to pronounce on whether any part of those areas can fall anywhere else? Do they have a mandate to do that? What is the issue there?
Chairperson, the Constitutional Court judgment itself clearly stated that that's not, it's the mandate of Parliament to determine provincial boundaries. The mandate of the Demarcation Board is related to the configuration of local government areas within those provinces. So in that regard, in the realignment of the boundaries, there's no role to play in terms of legislation. Now, of course, the advice can be sought. Of course, they can be consulted. But more on the effect that the realignment of the provincial boundary will have on the configuration of the municipalities in a particular area. So I think that is the relationship. Chairperson, so having said that, I think that the current proposal is to reenact what was found to be invalid. But we are not anticipating the outcome of the consultation process. Isn't the court clearly clear? Clearly, on what decision
to be president of the
basically from the provincial and local government point of view as the forte in justice. I want to know what is the status quo with Umzinkhulu now. I know it's not part of the Eastern Cape as it stands now. I just want to know what the actual arrangement is in terms of to which municipality is it linked to, and what services or which province is responsible for the support of whatever services are provided there.
This one is stated as not quite
tough and a half.
Because I think the cost is some cost in the higher cost, which is that
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, well, first of all, I think we thank the whole department for the wonderful piece of work that they have given to the trying to pursue political bias as well. Because the very level of asking for political response. When this conversation is taking place, we see a really constructive role and not just where the bias as well. Because because of the problem, more often than not, we find that some of us have been trying to be political minded. That's one thing. The other one, pressure on the issue of the opinion of the legal advisor that this act of this bill is not very contractionary issue. The respect is not a correct one. First of all, you find that in Manchester, there are people who are trying to practice the initiation.
when you transfer them from there to the Guadalupe-Natal, you know the Guadalupe-Natal state is not very successful. You may find that even in Guadalupe-Natal, there are headmen. In Guadalupe-Natal, there are no headmen. So, what do you mean when you say this school has no effect on traditional institutions? Clearly, it does. The question of land, it is a question of land. There's no way that you can say it is not relevant to traditional leadership. I just want to make it clear that so that you can take this point raised by my colleague Villa, that in fact, in our own opinion, it could be very good for this series of the disposal of the defense to prepare this national outcome of traditional leadership. In any event, it is a to the consultation process, because there are two individuals of traditional leadership, people will be able to be engaged, at least the voice of those people who more often than not are marginalized, at least will be taken on board to be part of this. So to do them, at least it will enhance the process rather than only that. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I'm standing in for my colleague, Mr. Herman Smith, this morning, who was not able to attend. Just on the issue of...
Do introduce yourself. He's not here, so we must know you.
Sure.
It's good that you introduce yourself.
Thank you, Chair.
He's absent.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Theo Hercules, and I'm with the Office of the Chief Statesman Advisor. On the issue regarding relating to the traditional leaders, I just want to emphasize that both bills give effect to the judgment in Matiel, and it was therefore our opinion that, stated in 6.3 of the memorandum, that the bill does not contain any issues relating to customary law or customs. So therefore, it's our opinion that it's not necessary to refer the bill to the National House of Traditional Leaders. So, but if the committee requires us to have a written opinion in that respect, we are we will also tend to that for that matter for clarity purposes. Thank you, Chair.
I think, yeah, you're right. The committee, I would imagine, if everybody agrees, that the feeling is that it will do no harm to us anyway, and that it would enhance the process. Every stakeholder is aware of the time frames within which responses must be had, and that would be the understanding on which we would recommend that it be done. Is that okay?
Okay.
All right. Thanks. Okay.
Hello, good.
let's proceed. Mr. Myron Peters, I believe it's you now, to talk to us about the feedback received from the consultation.
Thank you, Chairperson, members of the committee. My job is to, in a very objective manner, present to you the comments that we have received. And what we are trying to do is to isolate the key points in each of the comments so that you get an idea and a picture of what the different submissions commented on. And what the different concerns were. Just to remind the committee, the portfolio committee, that we published the cross-boundaries, municipalities, laws, repeal bill, and related matters amendment bill on the 18th of May 2007. The closing date for public comments was 19 June 2007. So that's a month. Ample time for communities, stakeholders to respond. 9 institutions and 1 person submitted comments. I'm going to list for you the comments, and we have submitted to your office the summary of these comments. We received comments from the Matatil Local Municipal Council, the Matatil stroke Maluti Mass Action Committee, the Committee of Matatil, Community of Matatil, which was presented by individual K.J. Moeti, from Contralesa, the Maluti Matatil branch, we received from Ward 21 of Matatil Local Municipality, the Eastern Cape NGO Coalition Afro in Zo region, the ANC Youth League Afro in Zo district, the Matatil Youth Council, the South African Council of Churches, and a person by the name of Mr. Nkabo, I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly, from Matatil. Now, with respect to the Matatil Municipal Council, they informed us that the council took a decision that Matatil Local Municipality remains in the Eastern Cape. They submitted to us a 33-page name list of individuals with their signatures to support this decision. Those signatures are with us, with the departments, and if the committee wants the copies of them, we would be very glad to submit it to your office. Now, the Matatil Maluti Mass Action Committee comprises the following organizations: the Poverty Alleviation Network, Cedarville and District Farmers Association, the Governing Body of King Edward the High School, George Moshesh Tribal Authority, Maluti Chamber of Business, Matatil and Maluti Council of Churches, Moharane Community-Based Organization, and Sizaneke Preschool Training Project. The comments received from this committee opposes the Matatil being in the Eastern Cape, claims that the substantial majority of the people support the committee's decision, demands the right to public involvement from the KZN legislature, and this is a very important point to remember. Government had no good convincing reasons to shift Matatil to Eastern Cape, and they therefore require a convincing reason. They state that the Constitutional Court indicated that people have a right to live where they choose, and they quote a section from the Constitutional Court ruling. The government, National Assembly, and the NCOP, they accuse these bodies of not being transparent and accountable, and therefore suggest that the NCOP must apprise themselves of the merits to put Mother Teal in Eastern Cape. The municipal, they refer to the Municipal Debarkation Board and that it did a thorough consideration of the matter, and the board found no reason to move Mother Teal to Eastern Cape. The Municipal Demarcation Board suggested Mother Teal Maluti be included in Sisonka District in KZN. It states that Parliament should reject the decision that was proposed by government, and it requests that the bill be withdrawn. This is a summary of comments from the Maluti Mass Action Committee. The community of Mother Teal, as represented by KJMOAT, they feel strongly that the boundaries were decided based on ethnicity and customs. The community wants to be serviced by KZN. They claim that the claims of services provided by Eastern Cape are not true, but that it would be important that when the NCOP deliberates on this issue that it visits the area. It's easier to get offices, government offices in KZN because it's only 2 hours, but Eastern Cape, it takes about 7 hours. They request to be part of KZN. They submitted a 2-page name list of community members. Contralesa is the next body, institution that commented. The branch submitted that Mother Teal be one municipality under the Eastern Cape, and they attached a list of names of members who attended the Contralesa branch meeting. Ward 21, Mother Teal local municipality, was from persons known as El Rita and Councillor Dolly. The communities in the ward were consulted. The communities support the decision that Mother Teal is under the Eastern Cape. They attached a list of members of the public who attended their consultation. The Eastern Cape NGO Coalition, Branch Alfred and Zo, supports the incorporation of Mother Teal local municipality into Eastern Cape, states that before these communities experienced many hardships, especially in rural villages, and that the incorporation may impact positively on service delivery. The ANC Youth League sub-region, they support the incorporation of Mother Teal local municipality into the Eastern Cape. The rural areas, they claim, surrounding Mother Teal are linked together economically. They're happy to see that now quite a number of visits by the Eastern Cape province to the area, and that there are consultations going on in the area with the communities. Their register reflects 150 people who attended their meeting. Mother Teal Youth Council supports the bill and the incorporation into Eastern Cape. Eastern Cape has been, they also claim, has been visible in the area, that is the provincial officials, and there are signs of change in terms of public participation and development led by Eastern Cape. They provided us with a name list of 24 wards. The South African Council of Churches had a somewhat ambivalent view. They say the bills merely tend to deal with technicalities, that despite increased funding to Mother Teal, it remains unknown how people will be affected. They raise the issue of travel again, Bishu 700 kilometers, Pietermaritzburg 200 kilometers. They just ask questions of how has the demarcation resulted in concrete projects for free basic services and roads. They recommend that government as a whole should take consultation seriously and devote more time to public participation and to listen to community consensus. When we summarize the comments, we find that 6 institutions that commented on the bill support the bill, 3 institutions against the bill, 1 institution has been critical of the process of taking seriously public consultation and the technicality and administrative nature of some of these decisions in via bills, and all have attached lists of attendees. Most of them, at least, have attached lists of attendees and signatures, which is very good for looking at the credibility of their comments. Thank you, Chair. In summary, I would just like to say that generally, if one reads through the comments, the biggest grouse in the comments is that we were not consulted. We want to be consulted. We want our views to be heard. We want to, even a proposal has been made that we want to actually address the legislature and so forth. And as you know, the court judgment says that this was a major defect, and it's precisely to correct this defect and afford the communities an opportunity to be fully consulted vis-a-vis the KZN legislature. It's precisely because of these reasons why government and parliament today is looking at these two bills, because these two bills do precisely that, now create the opportunity for those consultations to take place. About 90% of the, most of the issues are around, again, as my colleague indicated, tend to be around institutional matters, which are not insurmountable. With regard to the issue of distance, there's been evidence in the Northern Cape province where when it absorbed the Galagadi district, it actually decentralized some of its provincial offices to the district in order to be closer to that area. And so there are examples where we can begin to solve some of these problems. So, Chair, that's my story on the comments, and thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think one of the issues that is raised
quite consistent is the whole question of the distances to access certain provincial services. I think we need to respond to this very, very clearly. To me, it is clear that there's a lot of underdevelopment in that particular area. And realistically, sometimes this becomes a problem, particularly for poor areas to travel such long distances because it becomes quite expensive. I just want to know if from the department side they have looked into this matter and to what extent is the department or government as a whole preparing to ensure that such facilities would quite be closer to the people. that's something that they are raising quite consistently, the question of distance. And I don't think to a large degree for me to get particular services, I've got to drive from Brabant to Pretoria, except for a visa if the embassy is in Pretoria. But for government services, if somebody asks me in my constituency about pension, I don't think I've got to drive from Meyerton to Sasa in Pretoria. But mine is to ensure that at least that kind of infrastructure exists within a reasonable distance from the people in my constituency. Now, I don't think we should just wish away this issue that the people are raising. What I want to know, has the department applied its mind to ensure that at least the infrastructural arrangement, as Comrade Trudeau puts it, that probably would include the whole question of roads. But I mean, look, are there some thought given to ensure that the kind of infrastructure that these people will be need to ensure that they access the services, provision will be made for? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, your questions are good, but you see, there are two things that we are dealing with here. The department has done these consultations. What we must be looking at as well is how we take the process forward. One of the things we did in the last time, if I may remind members, we called for submissions such as the one the department did. We received the submissions, and because each of the two provinces has a veto, the NCOP to pass this ought to receive a yay or nay response from each of the provinces to make a decision. We then, the four of us, the chairpersons of the committees in the National Assembly and in the NCOP, wrote to each of the provinces affected and said to them, here are the submissions. You conduct the public hearings in your area because, in any case, you are going to have the veto on this matter. This is what we did. So we sent them this stuff. Now, once again, we have this situation where this is going to happen so that when the NCOP makes the final decision, they have taken on board the views as expressed by people in various manners, including what Madame Zuluzu is saying. But that's what they've done already. So the process is in our hands. We should work out how we are going to do it going forward. You respond to those, Maron?
Yes, Chair. I think in terms of the public consultations, we've had, as reported earlier, we've already had discussions with the speakers of the two provinces, and we made several suggestions to them. And we also learned new suggestions from Eastern Cape, which we shared with KZN. And there are quite a number of them. And number one is to actually begin to advertise the public hearings. And in the advertising of the public hearings, make provision or request anybody that requires any assistance to impact on the, to approach the administration. And of course, you know, within constraints, financial constraints, the provinces should provide that kind of assistance. Number two, also translation. of the notices so that people can read in both languages, as well as providing translations on site for the people when they attend there. And then three, also to conduct some sort of education. In other words, to take the bills, take the maps, mobilize officials both from the municipal council and the province to actually go out to the communities or whoever wants explanations about what the bills mean, what the maps mean, to provide that kind of thing. Also, the experience has shown that it is necessary to also provide good security when you have the public hearings at meetings so people feel confident to attend and so forth. Fourthly, to minute all the proceedings in absolute detail. And fifthly, during the proceedings, to explain in very brief terms to people what the whole process of consultation is involved. There is the sort of public consultation, which is external to the administration, the legislature, and then there's the internal, so that people have an idea. And to look into the possibility, as recommended, if there could be a possibility of any of the stakeholders being invited to address the legislature. So quite a number of suggestions were being made, aside from the joint hearings suggestions. Thanks. On that one, so I think, you know, these are the kinds of ideas that we can have for the stakeholders so that they can understand. Then on the issue of the services, where it's very difficult for me now to pull out of my head statistics around what is being provided in that area, but let it be quite known that, number one, the budgets have been realigned in terms of the provinces and in terms of the municipalities via the local governments, and sufficient provision has been made in the budgets. Obviously, in Eastern Cape, there will be provisions for roads, for infrastructure, in the MIG and MIG projects. We have some indication of what are the MIG projects, the municipal infrastructure projects in the Matatiel area, but I haven't disaggregated. But what I can tell you is that with regard to all the cross-boundary municipalities, we have a total of 113 MIG projects in this thing, valued at 483 million. That's our records are showing at this moment. So there's a lot of money going in there to make provide access to services and infrastructure and so forth. There's also a project by government known as the Tusong Centres. And as you know, 25 Tusong Centres planned throughout the country. It's been run by GCIS in partnership with DPSA. I'm not quite sure the extent to which whether a Tusong Centre is planned for Matatiel, but certainly those kinds of centres are meant to be at points where people can receive services, for instance, like ID and so forth. And we will push from our side to ensure that, you know, those areas receive, actually have a center like that in those areas. Then we as a department have met just yesterday under a subcommittee and continuing to implement a resolution which we provided to the PCC. And that resolution was that we as a department, together with National Treasury, will continue to mobilize the resources, both transfers, existing resources, and donor funds to the cross-boundary municipality, and that includes Matatiel. We are in the process of trying to develop a list of resources. The provinces will report to us by the end of the month on this issue. So a number of things are happening, but I haven't got the absolute details. But very soon we will be developing a sort of service delivery profile for Matatiel to be to support the work that the Justice Committee is doing on these two bills. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Look, I hear what the department is saying. And I think there need to be a special focus and attention to these particular issues that the people are raised with. If you go through this whole thing, this aspect of particular services, and I don't want to explain the whole thing. You see, I may stay in Crystal Park, but what people experience in Daveyton is different from what I experience in Crystal Park. I can tell you a whole range of things. Infrastructural service points that exist in Crystal Park, which is about 5 kilometers away from Daveyton,
which do not exist in Daveyton. But I don't want to waste your time. But the concern that the people are raising, or the issue, let me not say the concern, the issue that are raising here is very, very important. It impacts on their life in terms of their economic situation. If the infrastructural aspect is properly addressed and clear to them, we won't have serious tensions that may arise unintentionally. Chairperson, in terms of communicating and community participation, I'm satisfied that something is happening one way or another. And I'm happy that there will be a campaign to educate people, and there will be good security for those public participation forums. I don't know what is good security, whether we need that or are we scared of our people. I don't know, probably. That's the situation. I'm happy with the process. But I just wanted to know, what is the attitude of the department in terms of broadening this explanation in making use of the radio services or the community radio? I'll tell you what, I'm now a sleep sleeper. I normally listen to radio Mhlobo Wenene, particularly after 12. The issues that people are debating there, the consensus they reach out of that, coming from divergent perspective and divergent understanding of issues. And I would advise the other members to listen to that, particularly my party, my party, to listen very carefully. People are debating these issues in the radio, particularly in Mhlobo Wenene, and I know Radio Metro as well to some large degree. And officials, I'll ask them to get those. I think they do make DVDs, to listen very carefully. What people want are simple, very simple things. And if they are explained in simple language and clearly, but the perception of the people that have there is that government and departments keep away certain information from them, and they are actually running away. And we need to turn around that perception and be seen to be accessible to people. And if people want to question us, let's use the existing forums, like your community radios, like the radio out there, and those, what they call radio debate talk shows, particularly at 12 o'clock. It's surprising what you can have. And I'm just wondering, maybe if Chairperson is listening in Mpundulu, why are abantu bakhuluma ebusuku go 1 to 6 o'clock?
It's exactly the reason that keeps you awake at that time listening to them.
So I want to know if the department is willing to engage with these talk shows and to make sure that at least they provide some, within their education program with regard to this matter, are able to explain to people exactly what is for them.
Yes. Honorable members, oh, okay. The Tim Khase and then Mashiva.
Chairperson, what I'm going to say, I'm not saying people must go hand in glove with the information.
Yes, Martin.
Thank you, Chair. I hear what the department is saying. They've been saying to the people that we will decentralize the services. You see, we have got the province, the district, and the local municipalities. And what we hear every day is that people are crying out there of non-delivery by the municipality. For instance, where I come from, we have just had a meeting of some of the staff from the Department of Water that said they want to build a division there because people have no water. It's in the rural area. There was a tender from the local municipality of 30 million. You know, the pipes have been set there, but you know, our officials are not making it a point that people get water. I don't see how a community can go for a week, 2, 3 weeks without water. You know, people are time for just the simple delivery things like water, like electricity, blah, blah, blah. So I want to say that while they go with these public hearings or communicating with the communities, it must not just be a talk show. When they say they're going to decentralize services, they're going to provide people, I mean, when they speak of 700 kilometers and 200 kilometers, to them it's a long distance. But if government can decentralize, actually decentralizing that we have, if you want the ID or what, the best citizen, don't have to travel to wherever it is. They centralize by sort of having this multi-purpose center where people can, you know, they don't even have the money to travel in the best place. They don't even have work. So I think this issue has to be handled in, you know, properly, that when you promise people are going to decentralize, delivery must actually test the same.
Chair, on the issue of the decentralization of services, one of the suggestions we've made to the speakers as well is that when you do the consultations with the people, there are going to be a number of service delivery issues that will be raised time and time again, as the honourable members rightly point out here. But that in that consultations, you must have representatives from your provincial departments, like the health, the person in charge of health must be there, the person in charge of welfare must be there, education, so forth and so forth, as well as the municipalities must be there. And those minutes, and you must take the minutes and the issues down very carefully, and these people should at least begin to draw up an action list on each of those issues, and program it in their institutions to address it. This is the only way we can begin to, you know, deal with the matters. There's no point in only the committee, the legislative committee, going there, having its consultations without these representatives. And in fact, the legislative committees can actually facilitate this interaction around the service delivery issues. With respect to the SANCO, I think we will send a message clearly to the speakers again that there is an institution that they ought to contact and consult with on the bill. Thank you, Chair.
You must invite SANCO.
Let me use this language. You don't delegate to the department to revive SANCO. Baba, move no comment. Are you okay?
No, I'm fine. I'm very happy about the state of consultation so far, Chair, and the stakeholders that have been consulted. And in fact, the summary of the report of the people begin to understand what it is saying. And we will assist, of course, the department and in making sure that there are no people who are actually, for some of our people, because they don't have anything to eat, that they are organized, rallied around these things under the pretext that they support a certain cause. Yes. But we'll constantly monitor it. But at the end of the day, the voice of the people is what counts.
Okay.
And we'll make sure that it does actually maintain consultation in this matter. Thank you, Chair. I wanted to indicate that the Chief may excuse it one for one.
No, that's fine. We're almost done.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Topology.
Lunch, whether we want to stand in thank
you.
Viva Chef.
Viva Chef.
Yeah.
Right, this is like.
Thank you. Thank you.